Welcome, everyone, to the Ready for the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Greg Schutz. This is episode 33 of the 2024 podcast series, where we take a look at the draft-eligible prospects to get you ready for the NFL draft. And 32 podcasts have led us up to this final podcast prior to the NFL draft. I'm recording this on Wednesday, April 24th, which means the NFL draft is tomorrow night. That's right, day one of the NFL draft, the first 32 picks, Thursday, April 25th in Detroit, Michigan. And this is going to be really introducing my final mock draft. All seven rounds of the draft are on readyforthedraft.com. We're going to take a look at day one of the draft with this podcast. And I think this mock really sticks to where I feel a lot of these picks are heading. And I think if you've listened to any of my podcasts, you've seen any of my mocks, you've heard, you know, my conversations, especially when we've done the NFL by the numbers, taking a look at where a lot of these players might be slotted, you'll get a good feel for, I think, where I think a lot of these players are going to be coming off the board. Now, I will preface this by saying none of my mock drafts have ever included any trades. So it's difficult to really project a trade. You assume that a trade is going to happen that can completely blow up your mock draft. Instead, what I'm trying to do is really find the best fit. And that's really what I've done in the past, is take a look at who the best fit might be for this team, regardless of where they're coming off the board. Because really, at the end of the day, teams could trade up, they could trade down, but at the end of the day, who's going to be the best fit for those teams? So let's go ahead and jump into my final mock draft. And with the first overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select Caleb Williams, quarterback, USC. A 6'1", 214-pounder. Look, you know, I'm a huge fan of Caleb Williams, and it's not just because I'm a USC graduate, a proud USC graduate. But, look, Caleb Williams is the real deal. You know, we know the explosiveness, the explosive plays, just dominated, you know, 66% completion percentage, over 4,500 yards, 42 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions. His innate ability to escape pressure in the pocket with a variety of ways. The Houdini acts, ducking, sidestepping. But here's the thing, the arm talent, the way that he's able to drop the arm slots and make incredible throws. But you watch him in the pocket. Watch that Washington game where he's flushed. You know, the pressure's coming right in his face. He has to spin away from that, reset his feet. He knows exactly where he's going with the football because his receiver is running that comeback right by that front pylon on the wide side. Nails a strike. I think it was about 25 yards for that touchdown. You watch him rolling out, the torque on the body, and everyone wants to talk about this incredible arm strength, but it's in the pocket. Watch that UCLA game. That was his last game at USC. And you watch his play from within the pocket, reading the defense, understanding, I don't have anything here. I'm going to look off, come back to the other side. I know that I'm going to have a guy coming open across over the middle. Just the way that he was able to move in the pocket as well, stepping up, having that deep, 74-yard throw to Brendan Rice, hitting him in stride, right on the money. And really, I think the UCLA game, that was the final game in his career. He didn't have to try to play for the playoff or anything else. He knew that really there's no chance to play for that. And I thought he was playing a lot freer and was a lot more comfortable in the pocket because, look, he was Superman. He was the guy that, you know, USC was historically bad on defense this past season. And even in 22, they weren't very good. And it was one of those things where if Caleb Williams and the Trojans did not score on every possession, they're running the risk of losing that game, really losing any game. And so that's really where Caleb Williams, a lot of times, he wouldn't take what the defense was giving him because he knew that I've got to go for the jugular on every single play. I've got to start hitting some of these home runs because otherwise we could end up getting left in the dust. And, you know, I think that caught up to him at times, really taking what the defense gives him. He's shown his ability to be able to do that. I'm not worried about it. I think what you really see is this guy's able to make those plays. And look, this guy has been made in a lab. If you haven't seen the Pivot podcast, look it up on YouTube with Ryan Clark and Channing Crowder and Fred Taylor. Phenomenal interview. They spent, you know, I think 75 minutes with Caleb just talking through everything. And This guy's been preparing for this since he was little. You listen to just the way he talks, and the focus. He's incredibly focused for a kid his age. Don't worry about, people are talking about, oh, he's a diva, he's this, he's that. Look, this guy, Caleb Cares Foundation, you're going to see, the work that he's already done, within the community, what he's done for other programs at USC. Look, he flew his own offensive line out to the Heisman Trophy ceremony. When he threw out the first pitch, his offensive line was there behind him on the mound there at Dodger Stadium. And you watch him at the combine. Yes, he didn't work out, but he was there for all of his teammates. He stayed on the field and shook everybody's hand after the workouts there. And team guy all the way. And, he's all about winning championships. The Bears need to get there from, Rex Grossman to Jay Cutler to Mitchell Trubisky to Justin Fields, all first-round quarterbacks. Something feels a little bit different with Caleb. He says he wants to rewrite history. Bears fans, they have to be hoping at this point that they can finally get things done. Bears fans should be cautiously optimistic. There's your number one overall pick. Number two overall, you're looking at the Washington Commanders. I think Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner, is going to come off the board here. 6'4", 210 pounds. I think he's the best fit for Cliff Kingsbury. I really do. With that offense. But here's a guy. Look, you watch his play within the pocket. 35 of his 40 touchdowns from within the pocket. And, not only the deep ball, but then his threat, the dual threat ability with his legs, taking off, running. Just threw only 4 interceptions this past season. So he knows how to take care of the football. I think Washington, Cliff Kingsbury, you think about, the last two quarterbacks he really worked with, Kyler Murray and one Caleb Williams. So I think this is a great pick for Washington. Then you get to number 3 and the New England Patriots. I got Drake May, quarterback, North Carolina going there. 6'4", 223 pounds. This is a guy who is big. He's a physical quarterback. And, he makes things look easy. Makes it difficult look so easy. He's got a little bit of a gunslinger mentality, which could make him a boomer bust prospect because, he trusts his arm so much. And he throws into a lot of, a lot of tight windows. Sometimes trust that arm strength just a little too much, like I said. But he's got his touch, throws the deep ball well, can put the ball in just such a tight window, like I said, and can drop it, just on a dime over someone's shoulder. Pocket presence is smooth. Just a lot about his game is smooth. And that's one thing that I will say for him is, look, and as an athlete, people don't give him a whole lot of credit, but you watched him against NC State. He was able to beat Peyton Wilson, who ran a 4.43 40 at the combine on the 3rd and 3 play, was able to get outside and get that first down without letting Peyton Wilson run him down. So, I look at the Patriots, and could they go somewhere else? Come on. All that smoke, that it doesn't make any sense. They've got Jacoby Brissett as a nice bridge quarterback. Patriots will get their guy. That'll be the first pick for the Gerard Mayo era. And Elliott Wolf, who's the de facto GM, I think this will be a great pick, springboard them into the rest of their draft. This is where things get a little bit crazy now, because you're looking at Arizona at number 4. They already have one other first-round pick at 27. Arizona, look, Monty Austin Ford, he's not afraid to trade down and then trade back up. We saw that with Paris Johnson Jr. a season ago. Look, this is a team. Kyler Murray had torn his ACL. Josh Dobbs filled in well, and then Kyler Murray came back mid-November. 4-13 record. And I understand the situation here, but you have a chance to get Marvin Harrison Jr. 6'3", 209 pounds, runs routes like his dad, but he's a few inches taller. His ability to sink those hips, drive in and out of those cuts so quickly. The wingspan, 1,500-yard game, scored a touchdown in 19 of his 30 career games, 9 multi-touchdown games. This guy is just a playmaker at the receiver position, and Kyler Murray has always been at his best when he's had a number one wideout. Larry Fitzgerald, Nuke Hopkins, even when he had A.J. Green and Christian Kirk there as well. He needs that number one go-to wideout, and I'll tell you what, Marvin Harrison Jr. would absolutely be that guy. I know Monty Austin Ford wants to continue to collect picks. There are a lot of holes on that team. He needs an edge rusher, needs to fix, there's some holes there at the offensive line, secondary as well. But man, help out Kyler Murray just like he did with Paris Johnson Jr. Get him as receiver. Unless you can somehow trade back into the top 10 and get Malik Nabers or Romo Dunze, I don't see that really happening, just with all the chaos that's going to be happening with all the quarterbacks and everything else. I think you have to go Marvin Harrison Jr., and that's why I have him going to Arizona there. Here's another tricky pick. L.A. Chargers sitting at 5. Really need to figure out what Jim Harbaugh is interested in doing. Joe Horitz, the GM there as well. What's the situation? What are they going to be doing? Because, look, Minnesota wants to trade up likely, right? They've got 2 first-round picks. Even though they're said that they want to keep that number 23 overall selection, they want to go up. They want to get their quarterback. I mean, and really, when you think about it, Josh McCown was Drake May's high school coach. So there's a chance that, hey, Drake May would want to go to, they want to get Drake May to Minnesota. But with the Patriots sitting there, I think Drake May is the pick over J.J. McCarthy. I think Minnesota, look, J.J. McCarthy, he fits Kevin O'Connell. I mean, Kevin O'Connell's style when he was a quarterback fits kind of the same way. So Minnesota could absolutely trade up. I'm looking at the Chargers, and even if they stay at number 5, J.C. Latham, not Joe Alt. J.C. Latham is my pick here. 6'6", 342 pounds. Best run blocker in the draft. Hands down. Best run blocker in the draft. Jim Harbaugh wants to get physical. And you got Rashawn Slater on one side. You'll put Latham there on the other. You've got Zion Johnson. You've got Corey Linsley. You've got Jamari Sawyer there at right guard. Really what you're lacking is that physical presence, that right tackle. Trey Pipkins, look. He's 1 year removed from having a really solid 2022 season. That's why I thought maybe they go receiver here. Maybe they go Malik Nabers to get that number one wideout for Justin Herbert, especially considering both Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are gone. They've got Quentin Johnson there. They could always go with the receiver on day two because of the depth of this receiver position. And the fact that you could get J.C. Latham here really solidify that front. That speaks volumes. And, look, Trey Pipkins was the 50th rated offensive tackle, according to Pro Football Focus, after signing that 3-year, $21 million contract. J.C. Latham it feels like the right pick. That's why I'm rolling with him there. Because he could come off at 5, he could come off at 11. Either way, the Chargers would get their offensive lineman. Number 6, the Giants. There's a lot of talk. Could they go quarterback? I don't buy this. I just don't. You've got Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is sitting there, 4-year, $160 million contract. Yes, he tore his ACL. Yes, he's had multiple neck injuries as well. You bring in Drew Locke as his backup on a 1-year deal. There's a lot of money that would be tied up in the quarterback position, and you still don't have a number one wideout. Just because you have quantity doesn't make it quality at the receiver position. You need to have that number one wideout. I'm a firm believer in that. And you look at Malik Nabers, 6 foot, 200 pounds, out of LSU. This is a guy that, look, speed kills. He's going to get vertical. He's going to run by you. It's going to, he's going to make you pay. 89 catches, over 1,500 yards, 17.6 yards per reception, and 14 touchdowns. Just a second Tiger to record 2 1,000-yard seasons. Josh Reed in 2000 and 2001 was the first. He could easily be the top wide receiver off the board. I think the Giants getting him here, that would give Jones, really setting whoever's going to be up, at quarterback there for the Giants, setting him up for success. I've got a theory with the Giants. I got Bo Nix going to them in round number 2. Giants could potentially trade back into round 1. Does Denver go with the quarterback? Could they trade into the top 10 potentially? Look, Sean Payton's not going to gamble on a quarterback. He never does. So I don't see him trying to trade up or do any of that posturing. It just isn't in Sean Payton's nature. 7, Titans. They need an offensive tackle. Joe Alt, look, he is consistent. The technique, he's got excellent size. He was a converted tight end, and he moves just like a tight end. You watch the footwork. You watch the physicality that he brings. The Titans, they need a left tackle. Andre Dillard, Jalen Duncan, combined for 21 sacks. They need to protect Will Levis, really give him a shot at the quarterback position because we saw flashes from him. Joe Alt, left tackle, let's get it done. Number 8 is the Atlanta Falcons. And for a long time, everybody's had Dallas Turner penciled in here, including myself, looking at the edge rush position. It makes a lot of sense for him to go here, but freaking ESPN's Adam Schefter just put it into my ear talking about Byron Murphy II could potentially be the dark horse in this. And I'll tell you what, it actually makes a lot of sense. Raheem Morris was the defensive coordinator with the Rams for 3 years and had Aaron Donald and knew what it meant to have that interior rush presence. Yes, they already have Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata on the roster. That's a formidable duo up front. But then you look at Murphy, watch the way that he went over those bags at the combine, the athleticism there. 29 tackles, 8.5 for loss, 5 sacks, Big 12 defensive lineman of the year. And this was a dude that, look, you know, he was so quick off the ball, excellent change of direction skills, shoots gaps early, uses his hands, a couple of quick swim moves, and he's into the backfield. So athletic coming off the football. Ran a 4.87 40 with a 1.69 10-yard split. 33-inch vertical leap, repped out 225 28 times, so the dude is plenty strong as well. Look, Aaron Donald, I think ESPN said it best. Aaron Donald fell to number 13. If you've got a chance to take a guy that could be that next explosive athlete, that next elite player, you don't pass on him. Yes, you need an edge rusher, but I got him taking Braylon Trice in round number 2. You can still get an edge rusher in round 2. Could you get a playmaker like Byron Murphy II at that D-tackle spot in round 2? I don't think so. So Byron Murphy II going to the Falcons, 6'1", 297, out of Texas with that number 8 overall pick, which takes us to the Bears. Romo Odunze is still on the board at this point. I've had Romo Odunze penciled in here on a couple of my mocks, and it makes a lot of sense because you've got DJ Moore, you got Keenan Allen. You throw Romo Odunze in there, man, you've got all kinds of weapons. Cole Kmet at tight end, DeAndre Swift at running back. Makes a ton of sense for the Bears. But they also have Montez Sweat on the other side. You give him that 1-2 punch. Look, when Sweat showed up, 6 sacks, 23 pressures in 9 games, he needs that running mate. And I'm looking at Liatu Latu. Yes, there's Jared Verse. Yes, there's Dallas Turner. But Liatu Latu, to me, is the top pass rusher in this year's draft. And I look at him and say, he's the guy that you should be going for, right? 114 total pressures, including 26 sacks, 17 hits in his 2 seasons in at Westwood there with the Bruins, 26.2 pass rush win rate this past season, tops among all prospects in the draft, all those stats according to Pro Football Focus. You watch him, and he's so technically sound. You watch him with his hands. The hands, the club, the swipe, the rip, and he sequences those so well. You watch him with that rip move, and he kind of hugs that outside arm and really uses it to kind of slingshot himself around. He'll kind of hook it, and he's able to get that soft edge, gets that corner, flattens out, chases down the quarterback, relentless. He's got secondary moves. He's got counter moves to those moves as well. And I'm a big fan of Liatu Latu. Yes, the medicals were scary. That's why I had him drop just a little bit. But it sounds like he must have a clean bill of health, because I don't hear anything really talking about Liatu Latu and that head and neck injury that forced him to medically retire at Washington. Clean bill of health with an independent doctor, with UCLA's doctors, and he's been a beast on the field ever since. So I've got Liatu Latu, number 9 overall, to the Chicago Bears, the team with Montez Sweat. Number 10, the Jets. This is where Brock Bowers is going, right? Or this is where an offensive tackle is going, right? Well, the Jets, they bring in, you know, John Simpson at guard. They bring in Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses to man those 2 tackle spots. Elijah Vera Tucker, Joe Tippmann, you look at that offensive line, they've got a pretty formidable offensive line. I know that this is a team, look, you know, Tyron Smith, missed 37 games in the last 4 years. You also look at Elijah Vera Tucker. He's been injured quite a bit. I think the Jets, there's a lot of concern from Jets fans. Can these guys stay healthy? Do we need to get a backup plan at the offensive tackle spot? Olu Fashanu is sitting right there. You could grab him, and he could be that guy that can learn from a future Hall of Famer in Tyron Smith. You also have Brock Bowers. You know, you've got Garrett Wilson. He's the weapon on the outside. Bowers would be the guy that could stretch the middle, you know, the middle of that field and stretch the seam. You got Mike Williams as your legitimate number 2 weapon to complement Wilson. You know, that furthers that flexibility with this draft pick, because Bowers makes a lot of sense. But here's the thing. If Romo Odunze is sitting out there, imagine having Romo Odunze and Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams, who's only signed to a 1-year deal, by the way. You bring Romo Odunze in there, you know, look, 10'6", 700-meter guy, 21.5, 200 meters, and it was 6'3", 212 pounds, 4'4", 5'40 that he ran at the combine. Look, you know, he was Michael Penix's go-to guy. 92 catches, 1,640 yards, a single-season school record, 13 touchdowns, All-America honors, finalist for the Biletnikoff Award. You watch this dude, not only that speed vertically, but his physicality, his ability to go up, attack the football in the air, gain late separation, and then he's physical after the catch as well. Watch the route running. Put on that tape against Oregon State, what he does to Ryan Cooper, a 12-yard touchdown. Makes such a wicked sell to the slant at the stem. Plants to the inside, head and shoulder fake, so demonstrative with the move, then cuts it back outside. The separation needed, tracked it over his shoulder for the easy touchdown. You get Romo Dunze in there, you pair him up with Garrett Wilson. Yes, you got Mike Williams on that group as well. Mike Williams is also a guy that battled some injuries. So I just look at the future, whether it's Aaron Rodgers or any other quarterback sitting there, you've got a dynamic duo there at that wide receiver position. I think it makes a ton of sense there for the Jets. Romo Dunze to the Jets, which gets us to number 11 and the Minnesota Vikings. Now, the Vikings, we know that Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell want to get up and pick that quarterback, right? I mean, this is a team that's been in a state of transition. Kirk Cousins, Danielle Hunter, gone. So, again, that Josh McCown has those ties to Drake May, but I think J.J. McCarthy might be the guy that Kevin O'Connell covets a little bit more. And I've never been a huge fan of J.J. McCarthy during the season, but look, he's a proven winner, 27-1 as a Wolverine starting quarterback, stepped up as a leader, was outspoken supporter of Jim Harbaugh during all the suspensions and everything else. This is a guy that came in and beat out the incumbent starter, Cade McNamara, led this team first to a that loss to TCU in the college football playoff semifinals, then leads them to a national championship 1 year later. And look, yes, he wasn't asked to do a lot. We know this. He wasn't asked to do a ton because they were so dominant running the football. You have a Joe Moore Award winning offensive line, you're going to want to try to run the football. But when he was asked to make a play with the football, he delivered. This is the guy that can manipulate the pocket, keeps those eyes down the field. He can roll out and, again, looking for those receivers. He can throw back across his body, which can get himself into some trouble, make some odd throws, some odd decisions at times. But you see the escapability. And, even though he didn't run the 40 at the combine, posting that 4.23 short shuttle, that was 0.08 seconds faster than Troy Franklin. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. One of the receivers there at Oregon. Most first downs by a quarterback in the Big Ten with four, I think over 40 this past season as well, according to Pro Football Focus. This is a dude that has all the tools to excel at the next level. Again, I'm not a huge fan of J.J. McCarthy compared to some of the other quarterbacks in this draft class, but I look at him, I look at Sam Darnold right there, and he's going to be that bridge quarterback, but J.J. McCarthy is likely starting under center by season's end in Minnesota. Number 12 overall, Denver. Again, no Russell Wilson. You got Jarrett Stidham. Zach Wilson's been traded there as well. I still think that Sean Payton has something up his sleeve at the quarterback spot, but he's not going to reach. I don't know that Denver is going to make a move there on Michael Penix Jr. I think maybe he's going to be a little bit more patient. And I'm looking at the edge rush position because, you've got Dallas Turner falling into your lap. Right, I mean, you could go corner. You got Quinyon Mitchell there. You got Terrion Arnold, Pat Surtain the second. He needs a guy to play opposite him. They do have Riley Moss, Damari Mathis, Jaquan McMillan, P.J. Locke. They've got a lot of guys there. And when you're playing Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert twice a year, you need to go with the corner, you would think. If you look at the pass rush, they don't have a star, but Jonathan Cooper, Nick Benito combined for 16.5 sacks and 33 hits. But I think they need some help there with that edge rush. Get that a key piece there because they still finished 21st in the league in sacks overall. And you can get Dallas Turner at 4.46, 40, 10 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks. This was a guy, four in a three-game span at the end of the season, the SEC championship and the college football playoffs. I look at Turner, and Will Anderson was the guy opposite him. And the question was, could Turner emerge from his shadow? What was he going to look like opposite him? And again, 10 sacks, 31 hurries, 21.2 pass rush win rate, athletic, speed to run the arc, put early pressure on the quarterback that way, uses his length to his advantage, packs a deliver, a powerful punch. I think there are times where he will stall out with this rush, doesn't always have those secondary moves working for him. I think he plays the run very well. Does a great job, you know, moving down the line. Needs to work on taking on blocks. Lacks the strength at times to get off blocks as well. You'll see him win with speed to power, taking advantage of his length as well. I just look at the Broncos. Don't overthink it. If Turner falls into your lap, you take him. And then you can worry about that quarterback position later on in the draft. Raiders at 13. This is another team that's talking about potentially moving up. I know that Antonio Pierce knows Jaden Daniels from his time at ASU. But Tom Telesco and Pierce, again, be smart about this. Michael Penix Jr., you could possibly get him there at 13. Jimmy Garoppolo's out. Aiden O'Connell's out, you know, as a starter. He's still there, but he's best suited as a backup, a spot starter at most. They brought in Gardner Minshew. What did he do? He helped mentor Anthony Richardson last year in Indy. So Raiders bring him in to kind of do something similar. And I have Michael Penix Jr. coming off the board to them in round number two, but the clean bill of health ultimately was the big thing here. And yes, they could go offensive tackle. Talia Sefuaga would be perfect in Luke Getsy's offense. You know, Getsy's offense, look, they were second in rush attempts and rushing yards per game. So we know that that's going to be a focal point of the offense. But you get a guy like Michael Penix Jr. in there. I know Davante Adams would be stoked to get him in. And I look at this group of quarterbacks, and if you could get Penix Jr. here, I don't think they need to move up. I don't know that there's going to be a team that's going to want to trade up, because a lot of people look at Penix Jr. and they say, you know what, maybe we don't want to take him in round number one. Yes, he has those four injuries, two AC joints, two ACL tears, ended four seasons there at Indiana, but when he was healthy, he had those Hoosiers rolling. And then there with the Washington, you know, ran a 4.640 at the at his pro day, 36 and a half inch vertical leap as well. But the deep ball, God, such a good deep ball, just makes it look effortless. And his ability, you know, the accuracy on the deep ball, he's able to throw from the left hash to the far sideline and drop it in over the shoulder, just on a, you know, on a line, and just pinpoint accuracy. Yes, he struggled a little bit with the short to intermediate routes. Watch what Jesse Minter's defense did to him in the national championship game. Michigan locked him up, took away the deep ball, and really forced him to focus on the short to intermediate throws. A lot of stuff is a fastball. He lacks some touch. He does. He lacks the touch. You watch him getting out. He runs that sub 4.640. You think tremendous athlete. He goes and rolls out, and he struggled. That arm, the elasticity, something happened there. He's not able to drop those arm angles like some of these other quarterbacks are, which is surprising. But you watch him, you know, this guy, the intangibles, they say, are off the charts with this guy. And, you know, he's a little bit older. He's 24 when the season begins. But I think the Raiders are looking for a guy that can come in and start sooner rather than later. So you look at J.J. McCarthy, he's going to probably need a little bit of time to really develop, because he won't, you know, he's just turning 21. Penix Jr. Is a little bit more seasoned. And he's a guy, to me, that I look at. I think if he can stay healthy, Penix Jr. is a guy that could be one of those steals when we talk about this quarterback position with all the quarterbacks taken ahead of him. Raiders get their quarterback at number 13. 14 overall, the Saints. Now, this was a challenging pick, trying to figure out exactly what they were going to do, because, look, you got Jared Verse out there. They need pass rush help. You know, they need another receiver now that Michael Thomas Jr. is gone. Chris Olave needs help there at the position. Brian Thomas Jr. is out there as well. But that O-line, good Lord, it's a mess. You know, Trevor Penning, he may be best suited inside, struggled at left tackle. Ryan Ramczyk, the right tackle, chronic knee issues. Sports Illustrated was reporting that he had a procedure on his knee that should hopefully have him ready to go by training camp. But, man, just the injuries, it's so concerning there. And with Penning, he was benched in week 7, managed just 11 snaps the rest of the year. He's under contract in 2025, but, man, if you bench a guy, I mean, can you really go back to him after sitting him midseason? I don't know. Olu Fashanu makes a ton of sense. Ultra-athletic left tackle, tremendous length. He gave up just, you know, 17 total pressures on 689 true pass sets in his three-year career at Penn State, according to Pro Football Focus. No sacks giving up. Premier pass protector, moves so well, light on his feet, able to mirror, can hang and anchor against the bull rush. The run blocking needs to improve, needs to come along there a little bit, needs to get a little bit bigger and stronger as well. But I look at Fashanu, look, you know, you got Penning and Ramczyk. This is a guy that you can plug in and it could be a starter there, you know, for the foreseeable future. The Colts sitting there at 15. Now, this is a crazy team right here with Chris Ballard at the helm, because you look at the cornerback play. This is a team that's lacking a true CB1, right? I mean, they do have Juju Brents, who played well in, what, 8-9 games, had 8 pass breakups, I want to say. This team finished with 15 picks last year, but outside of you know, Kenny Moore, the nickel, had 3 interceptions. Only 2 were made by corners. I'm looking at Quinyon Mitchell. He's my number one corner, and you know, his ceiling could be number 8 to Atlanta. Atlanta could go with the corner to pair with A.J. Terrell. But I just... Chris Ballard, if he gets a corner, it might be too enticing. You know, he may want to go ahead and do that, but even more enticing, what if Brock Bowers falls in his lap, sitting there at 15 overall? 6'3", 241. You've got Anthony Richardson there. You need to continue to build weapons around him. You've got Michael Pittman Jr. He re-signed, 3-year, $70 million contract to be the wide receiver one. You got Josh Downs, who had a productive rookie season. Alec Pierce is back as well. There's all kinds of uncertainty at the tight end position. Undersized Kyler Granson had 30 catches. But Mo Alie-Cox, Will Mallory, Andrew Ogletree, 40 receptions between that group. And can you really trust Jelani Woods? Where's his health? Is he really a starting caliber tight end, or is he really more of a tight end too? I'm looking at Bowers. Good Lord. I mean, 2-time John Mackey Award winner, top tight end. I mean, everyone knows the story with this kid. So highly productive, presents mismatches with his ability to run by linebackers, too strong for defensive backs, closes the gap on defenders with such quick acceleration, makes those cuts down the field without losing speed, absorbs hits, just continues to fall forward. His biggest problem really is staying healthy. I think he's a competent blocker. You know, he needs to get better in that area, yeah. But he was so dominant as a tight end, as a receiver. You know, should he be a top 10 pick? You know, you look at the tight end position, have we really seen much from those tight ends taken in the top 10? I think 15 is probably the best spot for him, and you put him there with Anthony Richardson. I think that would be a great fit. 16, Seattle Seahawks. Pete Carroll's gone, end of an era, 137 wins, 89 losses, and 1 tie, led the franchise to their only Super Bowl win. Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald steps in. So you think, all right, well, they're definitely going to go defense, right? I mean, this was a team that finished 31st in the league in rushing yards a season ago, rushing yards given up. You've got Leonard Williams, he was re-signed, but he, Jaron Reed, Jonathan Hankins will all be over the age of 30 by the start of the season. You could see an infusion of youth. They could be targeting Byron Murphy II, possibly even Johnny Newton. Might be a little high for him. But I look at the Seahawks as well. The running game finished 28th in the league. They were 71 yards away from being last. And, you know, they're beating up along the interior of that line. Plus, Abraham Lucas battled a knee injury, shut down for 11 games as a result. SB Nation was saying that knee injury that he had in the offseason, hopefully he's ready to go, that surgery. But long-term health is obviously a concern there. They brought in George Fant as kind of some of that insurance, but I still think they need that help there at the guard spot immediately, and then potentially a replacement for Lucas, depending on where that knee is. Troy Fatanu. This dude could start immediately at guard like Elijah Vera Tucker did, but he also has the athleticism to kick outside to tackle. Started 31 games for the Dogs, 29 at left tackle, 2 at left guard. Surrendered just 14 pressures all year. Led the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line there at UW. And look, his offensive coordinator with the Seahawks, one Ryan Grubb, who was his offensive coordinator there in Washington. Fatanu, regardless of his set, whether it's a jump set, whether he's taking a 45, whatever the case may be, if he's taking a vertical set, whatever you're seeing from Troy Fatanu, so athletic, the feet are excellent. He's a guy that's going to go out and pull, and when he does that, he's looking to maim you. He's looking to make an impact, make a statement, and he's just a lot of fun to watch. He's a guy that could be an early Pro Bowler. He's got all kinds of talent, and look, Ryan Grubb knows exactly what he's getting there. Jags at 17. Look, they could go receiver to help Calvin Ridley, Evan Ingram there, Christian Kirk, you know, has battled injuries. But I think ultimately that cornerback spot. I think if I'm Ryan Nielsen, I'm pounding the table to get a corner to compete with Tyson Campbell for that starting spot. You know, you've got Ronald Darby. And Darby, look, you know, he started 95 of 105 career games. He's not a number one corner, though. Quinyon Mitchell is. He's that number one guy. He's done everything that's been asked of him. Six interceptions, two of which were returned for touchdown in 2022. 45 pass breakups, 125 tackles, 7.5 going for loss. Second team All-American in 2023. Excels in zone coverage, in off coverage, off man. And you watch him read those quarterbacks' eyes. He drives on the football so well. Again, ball skills are evident. But then he shows up to the Senior Bowl and they ask him, you know, press man. And he dominates, sticky, staying right on the corner, staying on his back hip, really made life difficult for those receivers. Then he shows up at the combine, 38-inch vertical leap, runs a 4.33 40, 20 reps and 225 in the bench press. So he's showing that strength. Not only topped out for the corners, but that would put him second among all defensive backs. And he's a phenomenal athlete, phenomenal player. I think, you know, Ryan Nielsen, the new DC there, you know, he had A.J. Terrell last year with the Falcons. He's going to get his CB1 here in Jacksonville, and I think they'll be better off for that with that defense. 18 is the Bengals. I think, you know, I've had Byron Murphy penciled in here, but with Murphy coming off the board in the top half of round one, that's likely not going to happen. So could they go offensive tackle? I think now that they brought in Trent Brown at least for 1 year, that kind of tempers that discussion a little bit. But the receiver spot, even with T. Higgins still on the roster, you know, it sounds like maybe he's now found a newfound love for and respect for the city. He did talk about wanting a trade. He's been franchise tagged. You know, Tyler Boyd isn't on the roster anymore. I think they need another guy to head things up. And look, Malik Nabers, well, Brian Thomas Jr. did for Malik Nabers, he can do for Jamar Chase in Cincy. Vertical threat. And look, he's 6'3", 209, ran a 4.33 40 at the combine. Vertical threat for days, tracks the ball really well, you know, can create that late separation. Makes it just look so easy and effortless tracking that football over his shoulder. He's a deep ball guy, and I think that's exactly what Cincinnati needs in that receiving core. When I look at the Rams at 19, a lot of people are talking, well, maybe the Rams will trade up. I think if the Rams trade up, they may be trying to target Byron Murphy. Maybe they're trying to target a guy like Laiatu Latu. Are they really trying to target a quarterback? I know Matthew Stafford is still under contract through 2026. They could be looking for someone to come in and kind of be the mentor-mentee relationship there. Because, look, they still have Stetson Bennett on the roster. They have Jimmy Garoppolo, who they brought in as a backup. But if they're really, truly thinking towards the future, do you really want to take Bo Nix at 19? It just doesn't feel right. I think teams, there'll be a team that will be trading back into round one to take Bo Nix. And I actually have, like I said, the Giants taking him in round number two. I think the Giants, if they do go quarterback, if they are concerned with Daniel Jones, it's going to be, you know, moving back into round one or potentially waiting until round two. Everyone thought Will Levis last year was going to be a first rounder. He fell to round two to the Tennessee Titans. Shocked everyone. Could happen with Bo Nix as well, because I think there are some physical limitations to his game. I ultimately look at the Rams, and you know they got brought in Tre'Davious White and Darius Williams, kind of sets that cornerbacks. You know, even though Terrion Arnold will look great with the Rams, could they go Johnny Newton to take over for AD now that Byron Murphy is off the board potentially? But here's the thing: when the Rams won their Super Bowl, you had AD with 12.5 sacks. You had Leonard Floyd, who had 9.5, and then Von Miller, the late addition, 5 sacks in just 8 games. But what you had, that recipe there, you had two edge rushers flying to the quarterback with AD with that interior presence. Kobe Turner, they've kind of passed that torch, right? The big thing for Kobe is, can he get back to those 9 sacks from a season ago? He was doing that with AD next to him. So now he's going to have to prove it on his own. But he's got Byron Young coming off one edge. What if they include Jared Verse on the other side? Back-to-back years with 9 sacks there at Florida State. showed up to Albany as a 212-pound tight end. Quarantine, he bulks up to 240 pounds there at Albany, becomes an edge rusher, and the rest is history. Ran a 4.58 40, 1.610 yard split, put up 225. I think, you know, 30 times, you know, with 33.5-inch arms. Devastating with the bull rush. I think he's bendier than people give him credit for. You're going to see him package chops, rips, slaps, arm overs, push pulls to get into the backfield. He does a great job setting the edge against the run. I just think, you know, you get versed there with Young. You got power, you got speed coming off the edge with Kobe Turner. I think that's a recipe that could be a winning one there in Los Angeles. Pittsburgh at 20. Pittsburgh, look, they need an inside linebacker, but I think it's a little too early for Edgerrin Cooper. You know, Mason Cole's gone. They need that center. Graham Barton and Jackson Powers Johnson are possibilities. I mean, you know, hey, you know, there was Marquise Pouncey here at one point, right? They could also use a receiver to pair up with George Pickens, especially with Deontay Johnson and Allen Robinson gone. But I actually think they're going to go corner. I'm looking at Terrion Arnold. He falls to them. Yes, they could use a right tackle like Talia Sefuaga, who I haven't mentioned yet. You know, Broderick Jones moving to the left tackle. They could use that as well. But you look at the cornerback spot, and you know, they picked off 16 passes a season ago. All the cornerbacks not named Joey Porter Jr. are no longer on the roster. Patrick Peterson, Levi Wallace, Chandon Sullivan. They brought in Dante Johnson on a one-year deal. He's not a long-term option with Porter Jr. If you bring in Arnold to team with Porter Jr., now they've got a pair of lockdown corners. If you watch Arnold, the footwork in his drills, you know, he's solid in press coverage. And then if you watch him in the gauntlet at the combine, supremely confident in his hands as he flew down the line. You know, he trusts that closing speed a little bit too much at times, but this guy's a high-end corner that Pittsburgh can take there into the AFC North here in 2024. At 21 overall, I'm looking at Miami, and really, I think the biggest thing here, you know, yes, they could use an edge rusher. I look at Chop Robinson because, look, Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, torn Achilles, torn ACL, respectively. When are they going to be back? Andrew Van Ginkle's gone. You know, Shaq Barrett comes in as insurance. Chop Robinson makes sense. You know, Christian Wilkins left for Las Vegas, so this could also be where Johnny Newton comes off the board. But I'm looking at the offense, and I'm looking specifically at that offensive line. Robert Hunt signed that four-year, $100 million contract with Carolina. He's gone. You know, Aaron Brewer, he was signed to take over for you know, Connor Williams, but is he truly going to be that starter there at the pivot? Then you got, you know, Robert Jones, Lester Cotton, Isaiah Wynn. Who's playing the other guard spot? I think you get Graham Barton in here. Technician, five-position versatility. He can immediately start as Hunt's replacement, can line up really anywhere. 34 starts over his final three seasons there at Duke. 6'5", 313 pounds. Again, technician, plays excellent with leverage, moves well, takes excellent angles, tremendous leg drive, climbs to the second level well, very patient. If you watch him against Jared Verse, you know, Verse, a tendency to attack the hands early. He was light on his feet, kept him in front, and he also learned from those mistakes. When Verse was able to drive him back, he learned from those, and you know that ultimately he was able to reassess and correct things and was able to keep Verse back in front of him. It was really a fun battle to watch. The lack of length, under 33-inch arms, that's why I think ultimately he'll end up kicking inside to guard, even though he can play tackle. Pro Bowl potential as an interior lineman. Eagles at 22. I don't know that the Eagles are going to pick at 22. They did trade up one pick to get Jalen Carter. I'm looking at Talia Sefuaga, 6'6", 324. Lane Johnson, he's 34 years of age. He's still under contract, I think, for a couple more years. But they need to think about life after Lane Johnson. Fuaga, look, physical presence on the line. And, you know, he's quick to set up. I think he's excellent as a pass blocker and physical as a run blocker as well. Brute force to this guy. There's nothing, no question about that. And I think the Eagles would love, I think Lane Johnson would love to have that as his successor. I think the Eagles start prepping for things now up front. I look at Minnesota at 23. If they do keep this pick, I'm looking at that defensive tackle spot. Yes, they could go Chop Robinson, but they did bring in Jonathan Grenard and Andrew Van Ginkle to replace Danielle Hunter and DJ Wonnum. So Newton is a guy, you know, there's a need there, right? Because Jonathan Bullard, Harrison Phillips, the only guys that any pass rush help along the interior there. 5 sacks between the two. Or a top 10 defense against the run. I look at Newton. 18 sacks in his career, including 7.5 this past season. Also very active. Recorded at least 50 tackles in each of the last 3 seasons. 27.5 tackles for loss. Puts stress on that inside, that interior lineman. A guy that, you know, look, he can line up outside and rush the quarterback. Excellent push pulls. Excellent two-hand swipes. This is a guy that's going to get penetration into the backfield in a hurry. Minnesota could also end up trading this pick away, but if they keep it, I think Johnny Newton is that guy. 24, Dallas. Really trying to figure out what they're going to do here. I mean, Leighton Vander Esch retired, so this could potentially be where Edgerrin Cooper goes if he does come off the board in round one. If you listen to my By the Numbers mock podcast, what you had there at the linebacker spot, history tells us that you'll have at least 2 linebackers taken. Dallas Turner is one. Who's the other one? Could be Edgerrin Cooper. This might be the spot where he comes off the board. But I also look at Dallas, and depending on what happens with Tyler Smith, is he a tackle? Is he a guard? You know, Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton, they're both right tackles. Could they move over to the left side in Dallas? That's a big question mark. They signed that huge deal with Terrence Steele to remain that right tackle. So Steele's not moving over to left tackle. So you'll have to figure out exactly what plays there. But I think the last time Cowboys took a center in round one was in 2013 when they used the 31st overall pick to take Travis Frederick out of Wisconsin. Started there at Dallas through the 2019 season when they brought in Tyler Biadasz. Biadasz is gone now. So you bring in the Remington Trophy Award winner, Jackson Powers Johnson, started all 13 games this past season. Yes, you know, a little bit of experience, doesn't have a ton of starting experience under his belt, but first team All-American, Remington Trophy Award. This guy has a nasty disposition, takes pleasure in just beating guys, you know, dominating them in front of him, just punishing them. A guy that has that violent punch to kind of send guys on their heels. Excellent in the one-on-one matchups at the Senior Bowl, able to anchor, sink those hips really well. Effective in space, not only, you know, climbing with that athleticism and sealing off defenders, but he's also looking to bury guys on the move. Shorter arms, so he has to really work to get his hands on them early, but man, that mean streak, workman-like approach, Dallas needs that up front. Green Bay at 25. Green Bay needs a left tackle. I think they absolutely do, because David Bakhtiari, you know, the injuries and everything else. I still believe that Rasheed Walker, he filled in pretty well. Finished as the team's top pass blocker, according to Pro Football Focus. I think because of Walker's play and his presence, I think Green Bay actually shifts in a different direction. I'm looking at the secondary, and look, Jaire Alexander, you know, he struggled, you know, missed 9 games. Pro Football Focus had him as 99th in the league with a 73.5% catch rate. His running mate, Eric Stokes, also bothered by injuries, nagging injuries, 73.3% catch rate against him. He won't be a free agent until 2025, but you know, there's a chance that we could see him, you know, see him released at the end of the 2024 season, potentially. They do have Corey Ballantyne and Carrington Ballantyne on the roster. They were surprising depth pieces, but I think they need to find a corner. I think they also need to look for a safety as well. You know, you lose a guy like Darnell Savage, and you look at the safety spot, and you know, they bring in Xavier McKinney, but they still need a free safety. Anthony Johnson Jr. is not going to be the answer. Cooper DeJean could potentially take on either one of those roles. Had that breakout 2022 season opposite Riley Moss. 5 interceptions, 3 of those were taken back to the house, 8 pass breakups, emphatic end to the season, Music City Bowl defensive MVP, 7 tackles, an interception, 1 return for touchdown, 3 punt returns for 42 yards. He missed the combine, missed the end of the season because of a broken fibula in practice in November, but man, he's actually a pretty fluid athlete. You know, people will give him a hard time. There's some stiffness in his hips. But you know, I think he's truly at his best in zone coverage, where he can read the route, read the quarterback's eyes, trust those eyes to close on the football. You know, when he's arriving, he's not just looking to make a play on the ball. He's looking to take it to the house, frankly. I mean, he's got a muscular build, which, again, comes with some tightness in those hips. Straight line plays, struggles with some of those quick transitions, but he's physical. I mean, his play screams safety, but I think he could also be effective as a zone corner. I think the Packers, this would be a great move for him, for them, because they need help at both spots. 26, Tampa. Look, Chop Robinson could come off the board much sooner, but at 6'3", 254 pounds, this dude could absolutely come off the board here. You look at Tampa losing Shaq Barrett. That was their big edge rusher. They do have Yaya Diaby, who ended up with 7 sacks this past season, but Joe Tryon, Choyinka, just 13 sacks over his 3 years in the league. Is he deserving of a starting spot? You look at Chop, and so explosive. That first step is ridiculous. 4.48 40 at 6'3 and 254 pounds. The elite athleticism, reminiscent of Micah Parsons, his Penn State compatriot there. 4.36 40. The difference there is the production with Micah Parsons at Penn State. You saw that. Not as much production from Chop Robinson. That's the biggest question mark there with him. Just 4 sacks, 7.5 tackles for loss. But that game against Michigan, he's the reason why Jim Harbaugh and Sherrone Moore took the football away from J.J. McCarthy. Why? Because Carson Barnhart was not going to block him at right tackle. Those first two plays, he was right there in J.J. McCarthy's face. And they said, you know what? We can't block him, so we're going to go ahead and run the ball. J.J. McCarthy only threw 8 passes that entire game. That is affecting the outcome of the game. Ultimately, Penn State wasn't able to get it done on the offensive side of the football, and they couldn't stop the run either. But he's the reason why they decided they were just strictly going to run the football. Insane. Such a quick twitch athlete. It's insane with it. And, he's a little bit more projection and potential than production. But, look, Odafe Owe was a guy that didn't have any sacks as the 31st overall pick. And just 7 sacks in 3 years. And I just look at Chop Robinson. He's a different kind of athlete. I think he needs a little bit more technique. But that athleticism, sky's the limit potentially for him. I think Tampa would love to bring him in there. You get some athletes, man. I mean, you got Kalijah Kancey. Then you bring in Chop Robinson back-to-back years on the defensive side of the football. That's some exciting stuff. Arizona at 27. We know Monty Austin Ford, looking to wheel and deal. Is this pick going to stay with them? That's a big question mark. I think they need edge rush help. Dennis Gardeck led the team with 6 sacks. Chop Robinson is a guy that they could target. Braylon Trice could potentially come off the board here. I think they could also potentially target Johnny Newton or Darius Robinson. Because, look, Bilal Nichols was brought in, but I look at Bilal Nichols. He also had 5 sacks at Chicago in 2020 when he played the nose tackle spot. So Darius Robinson does feel like he could be a match with Arizona with this pick. But I look at the cornerback spot. They bring in John Murphy Bunting. So Murphy Bunting's there. And outside of that, you got Starling Thomas. You got Keytrell Clark. You've got Devon Wilson. You got Garrett Williams. He needs a guy who's going to end up being a starter there. And I look at Nate Wiggins, 6'1", 173 there out of Clemson. He's a guy that makes a whole lot of sense, man. That 4.28 40 at the combine. This is a dude that showcases his speed. I think he's excellent in off coverage. He's got good size, even though those 30.5-inch arms are really on the shorter side, which can limit his ability to make a play on the football. Effort for days. Chased down Omarion Hampton on a 64-yard run on an outside zone play. Chops down on the football. Punched it out at the 1-yard line. Ball rolls out of the end zone for a touchback. So incredible effort from him as well. I think that'd be a nice pick for Arizona there at 27. At 28, the Buffalo Bills. Now, Buffalo could trade up. I think Brian Thomas Jr. is a realistic play here for the Bills. But I've got Adonai Mitchell as a consolation prize. Gabe Davis, he's gone. Oh, wait. Stephon Diggs, he's the one that was rumored with the trades and everything else. Ultimately gets it done there, traded to the Texans. huge hole here. And when I look at Adonai Mitchell, runs that 4.33 40 at the combine. He's a much better route runner than people give him credit for. Does a great job widening the corner, showing that outside release, getting the corner to open the hips, and then crossing his face. Easy separation on an in-breaking route. Speed down the field. You'll see him come right back down the stem to the quarterback on curl routes, sudden off the line as well. He attacks the corner, which is a thing that you love to see, and then you know he tracks the ball really well. 39.5-inch vertical leap allows him to go up and make the play on those 50-50 balls. Here's the one issue with him. He was never dominant. He should be dominant. You look at these skills, but at Georgia and at Texas, he really wasn't. 3 100-yard games and 4 or more receptions in just 7 games out of his 32 career games. But he was a problem for Bama. 2 touchdowns, 26-yard average on 3 catches. That's really the big question mark there with him. If he could stay motivated for an entire season, he's a boom or bust potential, but the combination of size, speed, ball skills, that's exactly what Buffalo needs. I think at 28, that would be good value. Detroit at 29. Detroit, I think they've really addressed things well in free agency and really in the offseason. They bring in Kevin Zeitler to take over for Jonah Jackson up front. Amik Robertson and Carlton Davis were brought in at corner. Emmanuel Mosley was re-signed as well. Marcus Davenport was brought in to push Josh Pascal, John Kaminsky, James Houston IV for playing time opposite Aiden Hutchinson. At the D-tackle spot, they bring in DJ Raider as a team with Aleem McNeil. So really, this could be a luxury pick. I thought that maybe Adonai Mitchell would be the guy here because, look, Josh Reynolds, he had some key drops in the playoffs. He's gone. Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's what, the highest paid receiver in the league now, $120 million contract. And Jameson Williams, I think Adonai would be a nice replacement for Josh Reynolds. I think this pick comes down to Darius Robinson or Kool-Aid McKinstry. Robinson's a guy that, look, he can play inside, he can play out, he's physical. The power in his game is a lot of fun. But I look at Kool-Aid McKinstry. What I like here is you look at that quarterback spot, and Robertson is going to be a nickel. Carlton on one side, Mosley's better as a third corner. McKinstry could be that other guy on the opposite side. Does a great job squeezing the receiver to the sideline. Forces the quarterbacks to make perfect throws. He's a cover corner. 2 interceptions, 23 pass breakups in the 3 seasons. But he's a guy that is fluid. Does a great job. The field awareness is exceptional. Reads the quarterback's eyes. Covering those underneath routes. Able to get depth and affect some of the deeper throws. Undercutting those routes. Attacks the ball at the catch point, so you see the ball skills. Also a dynamic punt returner as well. I think this is a good pick. Look, he ran a 4.47 40 at Bama's Pro Day. Instinct, speed, athleticism, ball skills. I think this is the right pick for the Lions. They could go with a luxury pick here, but I think if they're smart, they stick to their board, Kool-Aid McKinstry can be that guy. Ravens, number 30 overall. There's no Morgan Moses. He's in New York with the Jets. Daniel Fa'alele, he's not ready for that starting spot. I think this is where Amarius Mims comes off the board. 6'8", 340, only started, 15 games in his career. 5.07 40 at the combine for a dude his size. It's freaking insane. 6'8", 340 with 36 1/8-inch length arms. 11 1/4-inch hands, with the largest among all the offensive linemen as well. Tremendous D-man for a guy his size. Actually plays with really good leverage. Good hand placement, easy kick slide. He just moves like a first rounder. Such power in his hands. He can play with finesse for a guy his size, which is impressive. He only started eight games, played in a total of 29. He's a guy that can get lean, leaning at times. I think he's still pretty raw, but I look at the Ravens, you need another tackle opposite Ronnie Stanley, and this is the guy that I think they can bring in there and take care of that right side, replacing Morgan Moses. San Francisco at 31. I think you have to go tackle, right? Colton McKivitz was a problem there on the right side. In his first year as a starter at right tackle, Pro Football Focus noted he gave up 9 sacks, which tied him for 4th most last season. 47 pressures were also in the top 10. They've got to protect Mr. Irrelevant himself, Brock Purdy. Tyler Guyton, that's the guy. He started his career as an H-back at TCU in 2021. Only 14 starts in two seasons in Norman. But 2023, didn't give up a single sack, managed just 12 pressures. Very athletic, absorbs the punch from the defensive end. Violent strikes, can easily shove ends away from the pocket. Impressive torque to throw guys to the ground as well. Look, he's going to be in an O-line room with a future Hall of Famer in Trent Williams. So I really like this pick. I think that's really good value there at 31 overall. And then the Chiefs at 32. I mean, the Chiefs, you know, obviously you've got Rashee Rice with the whole accident issue that's going on there. They need, you know, some reliable receivers as well. Travis Kelce, another banner year, 93 catches, 974 yards. He needs consistent help there. But Justin Watson made some clutch catches for them down the stretch. Marquez Valdes-Scantling always had the speed, hands were unreliable. He's gone in a cost-cutting measure. They bring in Marquise Brown. That's going to give a guy, you know, both, you know, slot and the vertical presence on the outside. I think they need another playmaker, though, to take pressure off Kelce for Mahomes. And Ladd McConkey, natural athlete. Guy did everything in high school. It's crazy. Quarterback, running back, safety, punter, return punts, then settled on receiver. And there's always one guy in the draft when you watch his route running ability. It's like nobody can cover this guy. He's so quick off the ball. He's so sudden with his route running ability. You understand why he was so good as a punt returner, because he is so sudden and it's so difficult for him to cover, to be covered. Defensive backs, he's such a problem for them. He'll widen them out, plant, cut away from the DB. He makes these cuts without losing any speed or momentum. It makes him so lethal. Does a great job selling those double moves as well. Can throttle down, show a stop route, then accelerate and take off, and he's gone. 4.39 40 as well. This guy, look, he even on punt cover, down the ball at the 1 yard line. Very athletic. There were some drops, concentration drops in 2022. Dropped six passes. That was a drop rate of 11.5 according to Pro Football Focus. But he's improved the concentration this year. Good job extending away from his frame to make a play on the football. I picked Ladd McConkey over Xavier Worthy just because I look at Worthy. Yes, he's a speed demon. He's a guy that can get deep, but I worry about that frame. He's so easily rerouted. Look, for Ladd McConkey, he's so shifty. He's difficult to jam at the line of scrimmage. So that's why I've got McConkey over Xavier Worthy in this pick. So that's my final mock draft. I've gone through all 32. If you want to see my picks on day 2 and day 3, go to readyforthedraft.com. I've got all 7 rounds posted there. We're going to see how this draft goes. We want to see exactly who's coming off the board and when. I am really excited. Tune in tomorrow, April 25th, NFL Draft, Round 1. Chicago Bears will officially be on the clock. It's my favorite time of year. It's the NFL Draft, baby. Let's go. Then come back after the draft, and I'll break down every team's draft picks. We'll take a look at who did well, who had some of the head scratchers, who got some nice sleepers, great value coming off the board as well. We'll talk about it all after the draft. So until next time, everyone, for readyforthedraft.com, this has been the Ready for the Draft podcast. I've been your host, Greg Schutz. Enjoy the draft this weekend. Come back next weekend. We'll talk all about it. Take care, everyone. Until next time, I am out of here.